The blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatiampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatiampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatiampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prasya paramita hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi savaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening, for even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
We are here to use everything in our experience
to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Shall we look at this morning?
I want to look at something that's not really well formulated, but I just in the recitation this morning, you know, we are here to end suffering. And if ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. And just looking at that in the light of going against choosing a different choice than a karmic predisposition.
Mm-hmm. So choosing ending suffering in this context over a karmic predisposition that you might normally habitually follow
without ever looking at how that causes suffering for me.
Yeah.
And looking at how I can create suffering around that.
How suffering is created out of that.
Yeah, how suffering can even be created. Let's see, how does that... I find myself in a situation where there seems to be the willingness to act in a different way that I have never possessed that kind of willingness before. Or, you know, and I don't want to say that. And watching somebody that wants to feel kind of a little bit like, why me? You know, maybe a little bit like a victim about it. You know,
why you in the sense of why must I? Let me see if this is right. Uh-huh. Why must you face the karma of this and choose a different way other than the way that's the karmic path?
Been habitual, yeah. Mm-hmm. Why can't I just have the easy
and the suffering part, because you link those two together, uh-huh. Didn't you? The karmic,
that's true,
way is the suffering way.
Yeah, can I just have the easy suffering way?
Right.
Not know any better. and just hear a lot of conversation about, you know, other people are more equipped to handle this. And not me, you know. I'm the wrong person to be.
Right. Is that's how it's been used against you?
Yeah.
Right? That other people are more equipped to handle the situation and face the karma of whatever is up than you are. Therefore, that's proof that there's something wrong with you because you can't do this.
Or yeah.
You're being told you can't do this.
It's a mistake. And just watching in the process, watching a lot of body sensations, you know, just being pulled all over the map of, you know, of no sensations, and like, oh, good, uh-huh. This is going to be easy, you know,
uh-huh.
To just panic, uh-huh. Feelings of panic to just make a different choice.
So you're all over the map.
Yeah.
Like, from every kind of extreme that can happen. So from no sensation, this is going to be easy, to panic, where it's like...
Yeah, that goes back to that, I'm the wrong person.
You're the wrong person.
I got on the wrong ship. You know,
the wrong ocean.
The wrong ocean, for sure.
You know, it's getting rocky now all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's just wanting bagel. And, so my homework is to report on what I'm doing instead of turning my attention to the voices. Mm. And so I've been watching. One thing the voices absolutely hate is for me to do that self-facilitation and two-chair exercise. Mm. It's just like...
Worst thing to do.
Yeah, just don't do that. And if we're going to do it... For sure, don't get up and switch chairs. I don't know. For some reason, they just want me just let's just sit in this one chair and talk. I think it is talk to me.
Huh.
You know.
That's interesting too. Stay in that place.
Yeah.
Don't leave that place. Would that be the easy way?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good metaphor for what's. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Don't move, no matter what.
No matter what.
Just stay here and stay with conditioning.
Stay with conditioning, yeah. It's the easy suffering way.
It's the easy suffering way. And so I'm going against great resistance to practice that, that kindness to this person. Mm-hmm. Also, a practice everywhere, support on the board, about how everything is all made up, and you might as well make up a great story, you know, as well as a, and that was an eye-opener. Mm. It's true. And, you know, when the most suffering comes up around it, it's because I'm being told, like, the worst case scenario that's going to come from me not behaving in a way that everyone is accustomed to having me behave.
Uh-huh. So that's the story that's being played out for you? That's how the voices talk you into the experience that you're having, is by telling you that something's going to happen, you're not going to respond in the way that you... habitually, karmically respond, and that's going to cause some problems.
It's going to cause a big disaster.
Big disaster.
Yeah. Whereas the possibility is to, like, make up a completely different story. Mm. Why not?
Why not? It's all made up anyway.
I don't know how, you know, I have no clue how.
Yeah.
How it's all going to turn out. But to be exploring this territory of remaining true to myself is like, wow. Mm. It seems like such an amazing possibility.
Mm. To stay true to yourself.
Yeah. In the face of anything.
Yeah.
And so then. And one of the other things I'm doing to just not be the voices is, of course, just listening to my tape a lot, my support tape about things that inspire me. Mm-hmm. And
it's kind of going along the lines of the, you know, if you're going to create a story,
might as well be the support tape, is, you know, in contrast to the other tape.
Yes.
That wants to play continuously, and still one thing that continues to go against the voices and feels good and supports me is just to sing a prayer every morning. You know, to just not have any idea what's going to come out of my mouth, and to just let it come. And even though conditioning is there, you know, saying that doesn't rhyme, that doesn't you can't carry a tune, that doesn't make sense. But there's just something about doing that, but I just disidentify, and it's it's a way that works for me.
Yeah. Well, it totally sounds like it. I mean, the big clue is that there's so much squawking going on about it. You know, like if you were doing something that was karmically habitually easy and causes suffering, would the voices care? Would they?
No.
Would they try to stop you from doing it?
Yeah.
They'll be like, she's on the right track.
Yeah. So yeah, I always find that, I still find that a source of constant amazement, that simple little thing is just so supportive and a great way for me to start my day.
Yeah.
And it has been just denied for so many years because of that belief that, oh yeah, I can't carry a thing. Don't know how to rhyme things, can't. Yeah,
just anything. Just
to stop that.
To prevent you from having the experience that you're having of finding the thing that's going to be the thing that you really comfort you, start your day.
Just be a source of creativity and expression of life for this person.
And something that you wanted, like you was to go on the theme that you created about, so there's this possible story that could be going on and creating your own story. You know, this is what's available to you now. You know, this is what's occurring for you to do.
Yeah.
To occur, you know, it's all made up anyway. Might as well have the experience that's there when you do something different.
Yeah.
When you go up against karma, just do something different.
Yeah.
And it's challenging because, you know, the easy suffering route is the well-worn groove, as we sometimes talk about. And so it's just like, I don't want to get up out of this. It's just so comfortable and so familiar.
Yeah, I was just watching that this morning too. You know, just the body sensations are amped up this morning. It's like, where do I go to get relief?
Yes.
Outside, you know, looking for that thing outside again, rather than knowing now, where do I go to get relief? Guess what? Here.
Yeah, exactly. I love that motion.
Yeah.
That's it. It's like the metaphor for sitting meditation, isn't it?
It is.
Like, everything's just get up.
It's not plop, plop, fizz, fizz over the fizz. It's not going out there for that that thing to.
Yeah.
Anyway, it just feels good to come to the group and be here and.
Yeah.
And just grateful for this opportunity.
Yeah. So. Definitely. Thank you. Dave.
That was interesting. The why me part of it, I know that very well. And what I always get to for myself is because I can. Mm. And why me to be put in this position of going up against this stuff is painful and difficult and full of ugh as it is.
Right.
Because I can. I think for us here in this room, because we can. And it seems to me, what I was looking at as Corey was talking, is that's karma as much as anything else is.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, and often we'll use that word, I think, to denote basically conditioning.
You sense your karmic conditioning. It's just like a little link up to it.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just the kind of put the cause and effect that's within what is.
Mm-hmm. It's like the wheel of karma is called the wheel of karma, even if it rolls downhill or uphill.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I just think, I mean, I go about my life imagining that I have a choice about that. About waking up and ending suffering. But I don't think I do, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's hard to say because I've certainly seen people come through here and make a different choice than that,
mm-hmm.
and choose suffering instead of mm-hmm. ending suffering.
Yeah.
You know, and we all do that in a way all the time. But, you know, I've seen people come through who knows, actually, mm-hmm. in the big picture of things, but at least in the small picture of things, appears as if I've chosen, no, thank you. I don't want to end suffering. I think I'll just go with the old patterns that lead to, you know, deprivation.
What it is that that conditioning thinks it wants.
Mm-hmm. But it just, it feels inevitable. It feels like I've got this lifetime's worth of momentum behind me in this. And the way I know that is because I'm actually not choosing to end suffering. If I was going to choose anything, I wouldn't. I would choose something really comfortable. I'd choose to run away, all stuff. But it's being chosen for me. And I'm just, the body is going along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's always how it's felt to me.
I mean, it's just like the way life works, really. That there's an illusion that, well, there one can be going with the flow, or, do you know what I mean? Like, life is going where life is going. And to think that I have anything to do with that is the illusion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And it's interesting, you know, because we were always doing, I think, what was just being talked about, in a sense, especially here at the monastery, you know, always going up against I'm avoiding using that word karma, that, you know, the conditioning that's there that says, no, you cannot end suffering. You have to survive this life instead of awakening this life and all that kind of stuff. And would you reflect that? I've lost track of what I meant.
Well, that we think that we get convinced that we need to survive this karma rather than to awaken
mm-hmm.
and suffering.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and then I know what it was. And then, so that, I feel like that's always going on. And then occasionally these things come through
mm-hmm.
that are huge, mm. where the circumstances of life line up and say, no, you have to survive.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an opportunity to wake up and suffer.
Right. Uh-huh.
This is an opportunity to do the same thing that you've always done and just go with conditioning and survive. And all of that, that's when the like angst is there and all those body sensations mm-hmm. and everything. And I've seen it happen in lots of other people, and there's been a few times in myself too, where just something really big comes through.
Mm-hmm.
And what's challenging for me about that is that there's often other people involved
mm-hmm.
who don't live here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, there's often people involved who do live here too.
Right.
But often people involved who don't live here who have no idea what practice is
mm-hmm.
and no idea mm-hmm. if I were to make a choice that's different from the conditioned habit, have no idea why I'm doing that.
Well, right, no clue. Yeah, you're just mm-hmm. you're being odd. You're not being yourself.
Right, exactly. And you know what I was looking at? We had this Sherry gave us something to listen to. She sent it from Africa about sort of this topic mm-hmm. a few nights ago. And one of the parts that really stuck out for me was she was saying basically that we all are for everyone that we're in contact with. These are my words, not hers, but a representative of the possibility of waking up and ending suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the opportunity that we are, if we choose, that we are giving ourselves in all beings in every moment.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying, you know, there's people in our lives who will not probably make that choice in this lifetime, but might in the next or in the next mm-hmm. or in the next or somewhere down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just such a big perspective. And so when I get to those places, there's a couple things going on in my life right now that are, they're not huge ones, but they're along those lines with people outside of here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably there's not an understanding of what the choice that I'm making, because it is from, like, there's a certain thing around just kind of like security and health insurance and stuff like mm-hmm. that. You know, and I'm making what I feel like from a point of view outside of the monastery would be a really radical choice about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically a choice not to have a safety net of any kind,
mm-hmm.
which to me feels really alive and it feels right. It feels in keeping with this practice that we do and the life that I want to live here in on this earth in this incarnation. And but I don't think it's understood very much outside of here.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was looking at is when those big times come through where we make a radical choice and there are other people involved, that I think a lot of times the conditioning in them does not understand that, but there is something within them that does. You know, is that, because we're not any different. You know, what's in me, that possibility of waking up and suffering as me, is in them also.
Right.
And so there's this little, like, even the clinician goes, what in the heck are they doing? And that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But on some level, there's like a recognition of it, I think.
Yes.
And so, I don't know, I think that's kind of how that happens. Then it's like, and I would imagine that has happened for me.
Mm-hmm.
I know it has in this lifetime where people have just done stuff. And at the time, I mean here, mm-hmm. but even before here, people have just done stuff. And at the time, I didn't understand what it was.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just went to 3 or 4 different examples for myself of like just not being in the place where, that. Well, we use your analogy, there's a whole lot of stuff between me and the recognition of what it is that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And all there is conditioning interacting with what it is that person is doing,
mm-hmm.
rather than actually seeing what it is that they could be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so not recognizing that, but then, you know, later on say, oh, I know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
I can see what that was now. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's what we have the opportunity to do for each other.
Yes.
There was a, where was it? Somewhere I ran across something recently that said, you know, that something like, you know, the greatest contribution you can make, or the height, something, is to live from a place of love and from a sense of your own goodness, or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And that really rings true. Mm-hmm. That in doing that, it's like we each, that which is that in all of us, will recognize that when someone has the courage to do that.
Yes.
And that's how we inform each other, mm-hmm. of the possibility through who we are and the integrity of the life that we're living.
Yep.
And it's just such a big way to live, to keep that in mind and be striving for that, for living with that kind of integrity all the time.
Yeah, well, it's like the living life rather than choosing the conditioning that will interpret how to live life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things that coming up for me are like Martin Luther King Jr. and Gandhi and that kind of thing. There's a recognition of what it is that they're doing. Even though on the outside I may not be able to get to a place where I would do what it is that they're doing,
mm-hmm.
but they kind of represent the possibility of living a place from I'm going to be here, I'm going to respond from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, especially if you think about somebody like Gandhi, who I mean, I don't know a lot about his life, but I know some, and you know, it's debatable how much good he did on the content level, because there was just massive destruction and death and all kinds of stuff. That, I mean, it wasn't because of him, just because of all the circumstances he was involved with. But from that point of view, you know, think of, like you say, I think, you know, millions and millions and millions of people have been touched by the integrity of his life,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps haven't been able to live in that same integrity themselves,
mm-hmm.
but recognize
it. Yeah.
And then who knows the good that comes from that in the future lifetimes that happen.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, just a tremendous amount of good.
Yeah, it's when Sequoia was talking, I was thinking about that, you know, the old man with the sun, you know, the sun goes off and the horse shows up, and anyway, goes through a whole lot of series of, you know, the horse, he finds a horse, and then everybody's going, wow, great, he found a horse. And he tries to break the horse, and he falls off the horse, and breaks his leg, and they're all, oh, this is terrible, bad. And then the war comes along, and they try to find the son to go to the war, but his leg is broken, so he can't go. And so, yeah, that's great. And so we keep going through these, like, we don't know what it is that's good or bad, or what kind of effect anything will have on anybody at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
That it's kind of like the analogy of the bugs crawling around the outhouse of the Buddha. You know, later on in several lifetimes, they become monks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think what you're saying is that, you know, it's the process by which we live. It's the integrity by which we live.
That's right.
Yeah, and in a way, it's just funny. You come back to even that, I'm not sure, is a choice. You know, even that is a gift from the divine,
mm-hmm.
that integrity. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Cameron.
Along the lines of the draw to do what's familiar, I keep hearing something that Sherry said recently at a retreat, and it was what she wished for all of us is that we would throw out everything we know, quote unquote, and find out for ourselves what is true,
mm-hmm.
and that we would do it right away. and so I had kind of a practical situation where I saw that in action, and you know, it's just that the karmic pull to think we know is so much a lot of the times what takes us in a way that leads to suffering or out of the moment of what just is. Mm-hmm. And I was having to I'm going away, so I'm setting up the watering system on timers so that they can water while I'm gone. Mm-hmm. So I pulled out these two old timers that I had last year that I hadn't been using them. I set them all up and they worked, and I had this third line. I didn't have another timer, so I went and bought a brand new one. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work. And the other two old ones did. And so I've spent 4 or 5 days adjusting and changing and getting different batteries and...
For the new one.
For the new one. Finally, I thought, I can't... I must just be missing something. I must not... There must be something slightly different about this one, about how you set it or something.
Uh-huh.
So I took it into this... store where I bought it, and I said, you know, it won't start. It just doesn't turn the water on, and I must be doing something, must be missing something. And they said, oh, no, you'll have to just change that in and get your money back, because this year the rain drip timers have a defect. A whole bunch of them have a defect. So I spent 4 or 5 days assuming, you know, what I knew was that this worked. Because it was brand new. It was what I was doing something wrong,
right,
that wouldn't allow it to work. And all that time was based on me knowing. And it just seemed like such a tiny little surface practical example of how many other things in life do I think I know, and then I go off on this path based on that, that place of making that initial something that even seems obvious. You know, rather than just it being in that place of the fool where there's nothing to know.
Right, yeah.
And being always just open that anything is possible.
Mm-hmm. Right. Even this new thing compared to these old things could possibly not work.
Well, I started to wonder after a while, you know. I had done everything, and I thought, well, this thing, maybe there's something wrong with it, you know. And that's when I finally took it to the store, and sure enough, and they knew it. They knew it. They had bad ones. So it was like a really, wow, you know, all that time I could have just, it could be watering all those days, you know, if I had just taken it in at the beginning.
But it would not have been your bodhisattva.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It wouldn't have shown you that, wow.
Yeah,
this is my lesson. I don't know. Thanks,
that's
Sherry.
That's right. Yeah. So that.
Thank you.
I sometimes often run into thinking other people know.
Mm-hmm.
I know that other people know what I don't know, and they're right.
And they're right.
And I just, last week had the example of how it's good to check things out. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with something electronic. And I thought there was all this new equipment was going to be bought and all this work that was going to have to be done. And turned out that it was a software setting. Some little check mark had been made next to something in the antivirus, and all it had to do was be unchecked. But what the, I think it was last week or the week before or something, the discussion here was centered a lot around aligning with life. Just kind of, and I don't know what that means, except that in the moment what I'm looking at is, if something presents itself right there in front of me, mm-hmm. I have a very strong habit of saying no to it. Mm-hmm. And And I've been practicing saying yes to it. And it's not comfortable. Mm. But it leads to miracles. Mm-hmm. And that was just one of them. Mm-hmm. And another one happened this morning. I could tell you the content of it, but it was just this little miracle just from staying with something, saying yes, going toward, instead of assuming I don't know, mm-hmm. and just falling back and doing nothing.
Uh-huh. Which would you say that's the when we started with a karmic habitual pattern of like,
yes.
that's the default. Like if there's nothing else, that's going to go to no, and then give up.
Right, and often the no is just, it's based on what I think, mm-hmm. I like and dislike, mm-hmm. and can and cannot do. Mm-hmm. And it's been really fun to practice. And of course, 100 times a day, I just go with the default. Mm-hmm. But more and more, it seems the willingness, as we've been talking about, it's here. It's right here in front of me. It was just offered. Or the thought just came through. Uh-huh. Or something just arose.
Yes. Yeah.
Instead of saying, no, I don't like that, or don't want that, or that scares me, or I don't know anything about it, or whatever the conditioned response is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that is what it means to align with life.
that the insight arises, and to align with life would be seeing that and getting a distinction between what you would normally do versus what this insight is presenting. Because it sounds like the insight comes up, and then there's a whole lot of stuff that can happen around that too, where you have an opportunity, kind of like a fork in the road almost.
Yeah.
We were just watching a movie last night where there's a scarecrow and pointing in two different directions.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Sorry, it was a training film.
Yeah.
And is there more about that?
Just to reiterate that it's miraculous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't have to know stuff.
Yeah. That's really huge. That you don't have to know stuff. This isn't required to participate in life that way.
It's hard to trust it. It's hard for the karma, mm-hmm. to trust it. Mm-hmm. The conditioning. What good conditioning will never trust it. Mm-hmm. Never mind. About it being hard. It doesn't trust it.
It doesn't trust it, right? Yeah. It's the easy suffering road.
Yeah.
Thank you. Michael.
I think that something that happened in the sit this morning goes along really well with the conversation, and which is interesting because as soon as it happened, in the sit, I was like, this is what I'm going to share. So now I get to share it. And what it was this, so there's, I think it would be helpful to talk about the content. The content is I asked for help in the kitchen tomorrow. And I spent, and then, and I, and so I was asked why I'm going to need help in the kitchen. So that's my part of the sit, hashing through why I need help in the kitchen. And I got to the end of it, and somehow, right there at the end of it, I saw a couple things. One was that once it was all done, and I had hashed out my case,
uh-huh.
right there's that sigh of relief. All right, you got it.
Uh-huh.
Things are under
put it back in the briefcase.
Yeah, exactly. Like
uh-huh.
the relief from that. And the second thing was, and I also saw that I have this actually, that the feeling better that came as a result of that wasn't really feeling better. It was just part of the whole thing. It was attached to the whole thing that I had just done and was sick. And then the other thing was just how much intense mental energy I had just expended going through this thing. It was really, really shocking. It was incredible. Like, just like how all of my life force had gone for that couple minutes into this.
Yeah, the building the case, like you said.
Yeah.
Just like, okay, well, there's this, and there's this, and there's this. And it was like if you were a CEO at a major company, just like plotting your next move.
Yeah, laying out the case for the stockholders.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. And so, what I'm looking at is how there's a, there's got to be this other possibility where I don't have to figure anything out, and I'll still have the information I need. I'll still, the steps that are required, what's needed, will be, will be given to me without my having to do anything, without my having to give anything up, like several minutes of a meditation, several minutes of my life. And the other thing is that I'm not in all this thing that's happening, so I'm not, it's really, I can look at it and say the whole thing was in service to ego, because ego figured it out and then ego felt better. And really I had no idea what's best for the kitchen. And so I think there's this other possibility of, you know, what's best for the kitchen and how do I get to that? And just that in that place, maybe it'll look exactly the same, and maybe it will be completely different, and maybe it will not be what I want. and at the same time, I don't think it'll necessarily work for me to blindly say, you're right, I don't need that help tomorrow.
Because that's the other side, isn't it?
Yeah. And yet there's a way of, it's like cooperation. There's a way that I can be a part of what's happening, be contributing, and not be fighting the whole thing and serving ego.
How can you come from here, essentially? How can you be open to insight about how this could possibly work, rather than exerting mental force, thinking that conditioning will provide a solution for something, and then the ego feeling satisfied with what it comes up with, and building a case? Because it sounds like what ends up happening is that you end up getting sacrificed in all of that.
Exactly. And that's the thing that's so difficult to see, that because it just seems like, because all I can see is that is I'm experiencing ego satisfaction and missing the fact that I'm actually abandoning myself in the place of sticking with myself. I think that's the place of where terror arises, essentially, and where it just seems like I'm going to die. I think that what happened in the meditation today, maybe it'll be instructive for me to, like a clue, okay, it's something else. I'm doing it. I'm doing the thing.
It'll be like, Michael, else. You're doing it again.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that's the thing. I don't necessarily know what the something else is yet.
Right, yeah.
But it's something
you can't
else.
You can't think it into existence. You can't actually create it. Yeah. It's something that drops in later.
Yeah.
When you're least expecting it.
Okay, that's good. That's something. But just that that whole process isn't part of it.
Well, or it could be, because you got to see it for what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you know, the camera's little timer. You know, you wouldn't have been able to have seen that. You know, this is this hashing through thing that ends up happening, where ego decides that it's going to try to build a case and figure stuff out and feel satisfied after it's over, and unless you actually had the experience of it, because you actually saw it.
Yeah, and also in seeing it, I see that there's another possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Maybe that's good enough. I mean, you know.
We're just open to seeing possibility. Thank you. Penny.
That was really helpful. So I had an experience that seems along the lines that we are talking about of... I'm pulling together articles for a newsletter for a particular organization that I'm part of, and there's one article that really needed to be written, and I was probably the one to write it, and so I've kind of stewed over it. You know, I've allowed it to do just what was being described, which is take a lot of mental energy, mm-hmm. but not actually in the writing of it so much as in fretting about the fact that it needed to be written.
Oh, I see. Not even about the content of it either.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's still out there. Oh, God, that's still out there. You know?
Oh, no. It's still out there. Huh?
And meanwhile, I'm collecting the other articles and doing some editing and stuff. And what I kept being told was, well, I don't know what to say, you know, so I can't write it. And so then I realized that the deadline was upon us. So last evening I sat down and just wrote it. It was just so interesting to see that. I mean, how many thousands of times has this happened? Or, you know, I think I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this. And then, and I remember William F. Buckley, I don't know if he was a conservative commentator, and somebody asked him how he could be so prolific, because he was quite prolific, and he said, I'm blessed by deadlines. Huh. And I thought that way yesterday, you know, that. So here was the deadline, thank God, which finally forced me to put my rear end in the chair and write something.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know what I was going to write, and it just came out, and it was pretty good. And anyway, it's what I've written.
Uh-huh.
And it's over.
Uh-huh.
And I just, you know, I just noticed all the unnecessary expenditure of energy surrounding that you know, piece of writing.
Mm.
And none of it really contributed. Because when I sat down, I truly did not know what I was going to say.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? Because conditioning would say that there's a whole lot of stuff that needs to happen in preparation for this to actually happen. And your experience is that you just sat down and started doing it, and it was it.
Yeah. And, so that's actually sort of all I wanted to say about that. And then there was something else that just came up when Dave was speaking earlier about how sometimes somebody does something and we don't sort of get it, but at some level we get it. You know, and they use the word inform. There's, you know, the people like Gandhi or Martin Luther King, they do something that informs. And what flashed for me when he said that word was what a difference that is from being informed, how different that is from being inflamed. And it seems like in the world out there right now, there's a lot of people inflaming other people.
Mm-hmm.
And how unhelpful that is, actually. You know, inflaming in the sense of riling up, in the sense of, and in a way, it could conceivably be easy to confuse those two.
Mm.
But it feels like they're very different. That inflaming is speaking to conditioning, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then informing, as it was used in that description, is kind of introducing us to a more spacious place.
Yeah. Well, they take you to two different places.
Very different places. Yeah, and so then I think the reason that partly that flashed for me is because I function in that world. And to be to be in it without operating from being inflamed is just an interesting practice opportunity, you know, and not try to and to be in it without trying to contribute to that process mm-hmm. is a really interesting practice opportunity right now, mm-hmm. and it can feel really powerless, you know, because watching people get all inflamed is watching people get in a kind of unhappy way mm-hmm. energized. Mm-hmm. So it's so seductive to try to enter into that because it can feel energizing.
Yeah.
But ultimately it really isn't. Ultimately it's really depleting.
Mm. Yeah. That is, even though it feels energizing, it can be the experience is that it's depleting and it doesn't actually serve
right.
what it's attempting to accomplish.
Exactly. Yeah. It's actually it's a kind of death dealing thing, I think.
Death dealing, did
yeah.
you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then what I saw in that was that a while ago I was having a guidance session with a particular person and a particular being, and this being said that an interesting challenge for me, and I project for all of us, is to get it that happiness can be as powerful a motivator as anger. Mm-hmm. And it feels to me like that's kind of what was coming up, that anger is kind of conditioning's main mode, I think. Mm-hmm. Anger, dissatisfaction, riling up is conditioning's way, is kind of its juice.
It's perceived as powerful.
It's perceived as powerful. And the contribution that we can make, and I think the Gandhis and the Martin Luther Kings and Jesus and mm-hmm. people like that make, is that ultimately they're coming from happiness. And mm-hmm. the spacious place they're opening for us is happiness. Mm-hmm. That we can, in the midst of anything, be happy in that sense of deep joy. Mm-hmm. And that is far more powerful. But how challenging it is to trust that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because everything in the system is saying to choose the same habitual pattern that has been not working all along. It's like what we started with. It's like it doesn't work, but it sure is easy and comfortable enough in that.
Yeah.
And it's convincing that it's trying to convince us that this is going to work this time. It's never worked. There's no history of it ever working, and yet you just keep choosing it over and over again. So.
Yeah, and it's a powerful kind of juice, you know. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a kind of it's a kind of energy we're used to. Mm-hmm. And it can feel in the moment really strong, mm-hmm. But it doesn't take us anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right, because like you said, it's attempting to inflame mm-hmm. rather than inform.
And it will burn out, yeah. and then we'll be just tired, kind of, mm-hmm. or disappointed, or. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Thank you, Todd.
Yesterday was a good practice day. And I was just listening to Penny talk about joy and happiness, and a lot came up amidst some kind of interesting circumstances. I just love the whole process of making bread. I just have to put that out there.
That's what we did yesterday.
Yeah.
We learned how to make bread.
Yeah, just, I have a big cook in me anyway, so that's great, but just the whole process of it and the passion for which I will project was presented to us, and to me, who have never made bread, never known how bread was made, just the whole mm-hmm. life force in it, and just reconvening back into the kitchen at certain points throughout the day, uh-huh. and just really feeling part of this bread making team was really, really exciting, and then the karma came in, and oh geez, I'd never seen it so clearly. So my karma is never ever be late or never ever keep anyone waiting. That is a huge karma, certainly as I could see it as a child and certainly with my parents. So I had the task of watering yesterday and not letting the water go too long because we want to save our resources. So conditioning got me in urgency, extreme urgency, and I come around the corner and turn off the east lawn and I slip on the water on the just the very edge of the porch and just careened right into the rocks and took my knee up pretty good.
Huh.
Big gash and that. But it's so interesting. Then the karma is but don't worry about that. The bread maker is waiting for you in the kitchen.
You
so
must not be late.
Yeah, let's not be late. So I'm standing in the kitchen, you know, attending, and I realized, geez, I'm kind of, you know, bleeding all over the place. Not even attending to myself, which is karma for me, you know, what in the sense of Sherry kind of points out, what we'll do for the love of others, we will not do for ourselves.
Right.
And it actually took a senior monk to say, you know, maybe you should attend to that, or we can assist you to attend to that, which was, wow, that's good guidance, you know. Maybe, yeah, I should probably get that looked up. And then, but for the rest of the day, I got to see how clearly it's being really clearly separated out for me that pain is inevitable. And there was a lot of pain surrounding it, and it's okay. But the conditioning and the suffering and the layering on top of it is so separate. And it is so separate. And the story, there was all these ongoing stories, and I got great guidance and assistance on patching it up. And it was painful and uncomfortable, but it wasn't. The condition was telling me I was immobilized and debilitated.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't.
Right.
Absolutely was not.
Mm-hmm.
But it was telling me that.
Right.
And I kept checking in. Am I? No, I'm not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. Yeah. You can't walk while I'm walking. You can't do working meditation. Well, I am doing working meditation.
Uh-huh.
You really should lay down. You should really, you know, but I'm part of the team. It's like really, really getting to that level of checking in.
Mm-hmm. And you can. It sounds like checking in, like on an external level too. Like, you know, when the guidance came through about, you know, maybe you should really check out, you know, take care of that leg instead of, letting it go.
Right. Yeah. And I just felt so supported. And then it's just like earlier discussed about just always knowing, and it's like conditioning always knows. You know, every time you get a bad injury, you lay up. But that's not always the case. And in fact, it's so interesting. I've had lower back injuries throughout my life. And just recently, in the last 5 years, I've heard doctors say that that's probably the worst thing you do for a lower back injury, if with moderation, is to lay up.
Mm-hmm.
Is to keep active, keep moving, keep the joints going. It's the inactivity that will actually, you know, cause a certain lower back injuries with you know, proper guidance to actually get worse.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my case. The more I kind of moved around with it, the pain was actually ceasing, was kind of, you know, kind of going away, as opposed to you just kind of sit with it sometimes and it just throbs, and then the voices come in and you're obsessed with it now.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh my God, is it going to get infected? Just the storylines go on. And then I had the knowing that, well, you know, tomorrow night is Saturday night. We always just, there's no group to go home. And had conditioning had all these plans that I was going to do Saturday night before Holy Leisure Sunday. And then the new schedule's up, and it's like, oh, we go to the meditation hall at 6:45. Well, that can't be. I always know Saturday nights.
Uh-huh.
They're free here.
Yeah.
Not always. And then to cap it off, we had the training film, which was just brilliant. And I've never seen that actual training film in my lifetime that I know of. And it was so pure joy and happiness to sit through that great experience. And to see, for me, the thing that I took up with the most was, home is where the heart is, and that is just definitely my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Just pointing back to home is where the heart is,
and not in the head. Right? Not in the head.
Yeah, not in the head.
Yeah, because you know, you're describing like a whole lot of, you know, voices coming in, you know, all sorts of conditioning coming in, trying to pull you away from, you know, is yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And, Our task is to drop them and seek guidance.
Seek guidance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look behind the curtain.
Look behind the curtain. Exactly.
That was so fun. That was so fun. I just so, and then it was just so funny because then at the end of the night I'm like, because I don't bring my flashlight Saturday night, so we go home early.
That's right. No need to bring my flashlight.
Oh my goodness, all my laundry's up. I have nothing, I have no bedding, I have nothing to wear. I'm hobbling. It's 8:30 at night. I'm like, well, where's everybody? I want sympathy, empathy, I want someone to take my laundry down, I want my hermitage. You know, it's like, no, I'm adequate. Hobble. May I borrow a flashlight? Sure. Hobble. Take my laundry down, you know. Hobble. But so I got to my hermitage, you know, quite a bit later, and I'm like, that all works out.
Huh.
It's so interesting. It's just, it's so direct experience to what I'm not used to.
Yes.
You know, I'm used to in the indirect experience of the whole condition, experience of it, making it so much. And when it was all said and done, it was like, everything got, it all worked out.
It all worked out.
Totally fine.
Yeah.
It was totally fine. And I was was enjoying happiness amidst all the other conditions, circumstances that could have made it just a living hell, horrible.
Yeah.
Conditions could have made just a horrible, horrible day.
Instead of a training opportunity.
In which I experienced a lot of joy and happiness. In yesterday's experiences.
So you're proving that it's possible.
Yeah, proving that it's possible. So I'm very, very grateful. Thank you.
Thank you.
One of the places where I've been practicing making a different choice that isn't the usual habitual conditioned one is around making choices and then the follow-up to that. And I've had a lot of opportunity in the past few weeks to, you know, be, say, invited to do something or being offered a plan to go somewhere or do something, and you know it might be should I go to this or that, or should I go to this or stay home, and mm-hmm. those are the kinds of things that habitually for me are sort of paralyzing. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what I want to do, and the reason I don't know what I want to do is because I clearly have one aspect of personality that wants to do one, and clearly
right.
another one who wants to do the other.
So who do you ask?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and they're both usually pretty equally strong about their choice, you know, and it's not possible to do both. And what's happened in the past that's created a lot of suffering around that is that, you know, eventually I will make a choice and do one of the options and spend much of the time after having making that choice being the one who wanted to do the other thing and not getting to go,
uh-huh.
you know, and suffer because I made, quote, the wrong choice.
Well, the wrong choice would be coming from, you know, maybe a third party,
right.
would
yeah,
you say?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so so in a way there's two people who are unhappy, the one who didn't get to do what she wanted to do and the one who's evaluating the choice. I mean, mm-hmm. or, you know, anyway, the one who got to do it isn't happy either because she's being told it was not the
wrong
thing
to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I've just really been practicing lately not doing it that way and mm-hmm. just knowing that whenever I make a decision, a choice, that I've made that
mm-hmm.
and that I'm just going to do that one and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And sometimes I do it and notice that this really isn't that entertaining or enjoyable or what I would like to be doing, but it's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's been no after conversation.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like, okay, this is what we chose. And we're going to go and see how we are when we do this thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, and maybe that'll inform our future choices. But
uh-huh.
it's just a very different, it's just such a different process to just say, okay, we, you know, it was like, what was it, Landmark, you know, the vanilla chocolate chew.
Right,
you know?
Vanilla chocolate chew.
Okay, so we chose vanilla. Let's mm-hmm. just go see how vanilla is.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
That's it. That's all we did.
Yeah, and it sounds like your perspective is to see what happens as you do that.
Yeah.
It's
exactly.
like, okay, so that's what I project people talk about when they talk about coming to the monastery and working meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like, it's not like you're going to have a choice about it or something mm-hmm. to be able to comment about afterwards. You could,
yeah.
but it's like, this is what you, it's clean, it's washing dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's what we're doing.
Okay, yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're doing.
How do we do that?
How do we do that? Yeah.
yeah.
How do we cause ourselves to suffer in that? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, in a way, just letting go of that, letting go of that notion of the parallel reality, because there would be often mm-hmm. be that what you could have done.
You could have been out in the garden.
You could have done it. Or, you know, you could go here, it could go there, you chose to go there, well, you could have gone there. Well, no, I actually couldn't have because
you
I'm
didn't.
Here.
Right.
You know, I couldn't have actually done that.
Right.
You
yes,
know,
yes.
having now chosen to do this, I can't do that.
Right.
So it's a much less stressful way to do that.
Yeah, it's just the whole thing is the way you're describing it is just designed to torture you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
like whatever you end up deciding
yeah.
to do.
Yeah, and just the no, just practicing the no beatings for whatever course of action I choose to
do. No beatings.
Yeah. Okay, this is what I finally decided to do about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Great. All right, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
No, we're having no conversations.
Right. Yeah. And it, when we talk about it as facilitators, no reviews.
Yeah.
It's like, it happened. Whatever insight I'm going to have about it, it happened in the moment. It's not going to happen sitting down, going to this to figure out what to think about it, how to suffer over it, or what I'm going to do next time, or anything like that.
Yeah.
Very freeing. Thank you. All right, that's our time. Thank you all.